Before we continue, one of the ways we keep all of our content for you, the listener, free of charge is our amazing sponsors, and today, Anchor is one of those sponsors. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free, there's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcasts right from your phone or computer. Anchor is going to distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere podcasts are listened to, and you can even make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started.
Hey everybody, on this episode of the Riverdale After Show, we're breaking down Season 4, Episode 5, Chapter 63, Hereditary. Look at this. We've got Jughead solving a mystery, Veronica's jailbird parents hooking back up, and holy cow, Mr. Chipping takes the Stonewall plunge. Basically, it's business as usual. Let's do it.
I'm Maria Menounos, and you're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
Uh-oh, it's a Riverdale After Show. Look out, gonna jump out a window to hide a secret. Better go get some help. Look at that, that was a little jam for everybody right there on the Riverdale After Show. Everybody, welcome. Breaking down everything that's happening in Riverdale every Wednesday night on the CW. I am Frank Moran, but, you know, I'm not just alone. Making me look good, sound even better. We got Ryan in the booth.
Ryan in the booth, sporting the Wawa East Coast shirt. Shout out to Wawa on this Riverdale After Show.
What the heck is Wawa?
You don't know.
I don't know what Wawa is.
You don't know what Wawa is.
The only thing I know is Wawa is anytime the adults talk in a Charlie Brown cartoon.
Yes, it is that, but it is also the best convenience store on earth. Ooh. It is incredible. It is a place on the East Coast where you can go get gas, you can go get hoagies, you can go get milk, breakfast items, anything, anytime, day or night. Wawa is the place for you. And I highly recommend that the West Coast step up their game and get some.
So I assume it's just essentially an East Coast version of a 7-Eleven.
Oh, you would think so, Frank, but you're wrong.
It's even better?
Oh, it's even better, Frank. It's even better. We are open 24/7. I know 7-Eleven is too, but their name doesn't suggest that. So keep, they lose business on that name. Also, I will say for Wawa, and we'll get to Riverdale really shortly, I will say for Wawa, they have hoagies. 7-Eleven doesn't have hoagies. They make them in front of you just like Subway, but better. There's more heart put into them.
Ooh. All right, well, you can't beat a sandwich filled with love. Folks, look at that. Just a little tip of the hat to all you East Coasters who maybe if you want to put this on pause for a second, go grab yourself a hoagie or a Wawa, come back, and chow down on it while your listeners break down all the latest shenanigans happening in Riverdale. But first, as always, like us on Facebook. Give us those 5 stars on iTunes. Subscribe to the YouTube channel. You know, hop in the chat. Share your thoughts about anything that's happening in this episode, anything Riverdale in general, anything you want to just get off your chest. Maybe there's just something that's been on your mind lately, and you just want to get mine and Ryan's advice. You know, we're here to help. That's what we're here for.
That's right. So any questions you have, yeah, we're here to answer.
You know, should you ask that girl out? Hey, what kind of car is the best car to have? Hey, should I pay my taxes? Any of those kind of questions, we can give you that sort of advice.
That's right.
Yeah, there you go.
Riverdale advice.
So, folks, we'll be breaking down this episode. At the end, we'll do just a splash of news to round out the episode. But this episode was it intrigued and then got bonkers towards the end. So I guess that if you had to describe Riverdale in a sentence, I think you would tell somebody like, hey, it's a show that gets crazy and then just goes bonkers at the end. I think that's how you describe it. And so this right here, a great, great entry into the Riverdale canon. So, starting it off here, if you had to break down all the four core characters, you've got Archie, Jughead, Betty, Veronica, all the various storylines that are kind of percolating, starting to kind of blossom into what we think they're going to be for the rest of the season. I'm going to put my least favorite right now as Archie in the community center. It just seems kind of dull compared to what we've got going on with Veronica, Betty, and Jughead. Ryan, I'm going to be honest with you.
I mean, yeah, certainly. You can be honest with me, Frank.
I'm going to be honest. Yeah, I mean, Archie has he's recovering from the death of his father. He wants to make a difference in the town. But I got to admit, this storyline of him trying to be like a masked vigilante at night who's, catching kids and then instead of turning over to the cops, he then just goes around the corner, takes off his mask, and then comes up to them as just simple Archie, just with like a helping hand. It's getting a little tiresome.
Not working for you, huh?
No, it's just I feel like there hasn't been enough forward momentum because we keep hearing about Dodger. Dodger's the mysterious guy that's, you know, running out of there from the arcade, and he's running these kids and making them do all the, you know, all the shenanigans that they want, so that if they get arrested, they go to juvie, and then they come back out and they just go work for Dodger, because he gives them free pizza and free arcade games.
Right.
There you go. You know, I mean, I shouldn't say free arcade games. He gives them just arcade tokens, which they in turn then just spend at the arcade. So, for you as a teenager,
whoa, yeah, not a teenager anymore, but might look like it,
yes,
because of my dashing good looks. But what were you going to ask about my age? Yes,
how strong? All right, let's jump back to your teenage years.
Okay, jumping, you know, back a few years
in an age where, and certainly, I guess we have to suspend belief that Riverdale is kind of a time fluid kind of place. You know, it's supposed to be modern day, but it also has nods to the past within its, you know, kind of societal makeup.
Right.
But this is an arcade. Would you be plied with wanting to do something for somebody for free arcade games and pizza?
Could I be bribed,
yes,
to do something for someone for arcade games and pizza? Well, I mean, it's a great question. I think it depends on what games are in the arcade. You know, I'm a big Miss Pac-Man fan. I'm also Dig Dug. If that's there, I would. You could get me to basically do anything if you can give me enough coins to play around a Dig Dug.
Oh, nice.
As well as, you know, I'm pretty good at pinball. Some say I'm a wizard, and I would love to do that. So it depends on the games in the arcade. Also, if it's anything themed Star Wars in any sort of way, shape, or form, yeah, I'd probably, they could bribe me to do anything. But what are they bribing me to do, Frank?
You know, basically break into cars, commit petty larceny, things like
just
that.
Crime.
Yeah, crime, essentially. I mean, if there's Burger Time, would you do Burger Time?
Burger Time. I do it for that.
There you go. I mean, yeah, Burger Time, that's a fun game. I mean, how can you not just want to make a burger patty?
Only that, though. If it wasn't that type of game, nah, I'm turning the other cheek.
It's just in a day and age where everybody has video game consoles at home, or even handheld stuff.
Right.
You know, does the lure of video games at an arcade, is that really a strong lure?
Okay, well, first of all, when you say arcade, you're giving me a sense of location where, you know, most of the arcades I went to in my teenage years were at the beach. So I'm thinking, okay, now this scenario, this bribery, if you will, is taking place at a beach that I am at right now. So I'm already kind of soaking up the sun. I'm in a rare mood. I'm feeling jolly. And that, my guard's sort of halfway down at that point. So that makes it even easier for someone to maybe bribe me in that way.
All right.
However, if I'm back in Delaware where I'm from, yeah, odds are I'm not going to be around arcade. I will have that Xbox or PS4 at home, and I'll just probably say, nah, I'm good. I'm not going to break into a car for you, sir. Also, I'm not going to take your candy either.
Oh, look at you. All right. So essentially, Archie's basically fighting seems to be a losing battle. I mean, he's getting a little traction because he's trying to make a difference one kid at a time. He rescues one kid from potentially stealing a car, gets him a job at Pop's Chocolate Shop. Things seem to be turning around, but it's just one person, you know? And he's got so many kids in the town, and Dodger's just looking to capitalize on them as much as he can. So what does Archie do? Well, he gets a visit from Hiram Lodge, who's now free from prison, and wants to stop by the gym just to say, hey, pay his condolences to Archie and his respects for the passing of Fred Andrews, who was somebody that Hiram respected. So, you know, very cool, but it would have been nice to have. We saw very few scenes of any time of Hiram and Fred together during the course of the season. We'd see, you know, maybe one a season, but not enough really to kind of see where the two of them stood in terms of each other. I mean, they certainly weren't friends, you know, but I guess there was an underlying respect between the two of them, at least maybe Hiram towards Fred. I don't know. I mean, Fred seemed to try to see the best in everybody, or at least he wouldn't let anybody just, you know, walk over him. So, you know, great to see him pay his respects, but it would have been nice to, if we ever saw more Hiram and Fred scenes. But he also gives Archie, as a way to kind of honor his dad, a blank check to do anything that he wants at the community center because he appreciates what he's doing. And this right time, I think in all four seasons, the first time we really see Archie finally remembering his past and deciding to make a change in the future, he does not accept it because he knows that there's always something that comes along with it. Even if it's not mentioned in the moment, there's always going to be some sort of string attached, especially to something like a blank check. And I'm going to ask you, Ryan, if you got a blank check, would you Would you swing for the fences, and what kind of dollar amount you'd write on a blank check? Or do you feel like you could rein your self-control in here and just like write down exactly only the amount that you needed to get something?
To get something. Oh, man, a blank check would be so awesome right now. I think, man, reeling it in, I don't know if I'd be able to reel it in, really. I would go pretty high on that blank check, sadly to say. So, I do think. I also wanted to shout a few people out in the chat right now.
We got
Grayson Ryan here each and every week. Awesome to see you, Grayson. We also got External Shockwave.
Yes.
Putting up the words in the chat. Showing some love to you, External Shockwave. And Jassy Jones, her birthday is in less than 2 hours. Or no, I guess, wait. Two and a half hours away. Happy early birthday to you. Thank you so much for spending the night before your birthday with us on the Riverdale After Show. And Frank, what would you do with a blank check right now? That's what I'm curious about.
Well, first I want to thank her because, I mean, usually you get gifts. And she's truly given the greatest gift of all, Ryan, by hanging out watching the Riverdale After Show.
Well,
very awesome. Me with a blank check, I got to be honest. You know, I would like to think that I'd be like really upstanding and go, I'm only going to write the dollar amount that I need to say with somebody like, hey, to cover this month's bills. And I would just put down just the exact amount. But if it was a blank check, I got to admit, I would want to try to get myself a little extra padding in there.
Right.
You know, whether it's so I could be a little bit up on the next month's rent or there's something that I know that's coming up that I really want to do or get. That I could use that to help make that happen.
I mean, it's the holiday season, so I'm getting gifts for everyone. I would say the same thing. I wish I would say a low number and just whatever this month, but I want some security.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and I feel like if somebody's giving you a blank check, they're expecting you to kind of go big, maybe. That is me just assuming, so that I don't feel as bad when I write a really big number on that check. They want me to write a big number, so I should write a big number, of course.
Right.
Yeah, nobody gives me a blank check and just says, yeah, just write $100. No.
No.
No, 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 no. Because we can write in $100. That's easy. Boom. No, no, no. You want me to go big. So Archie, though, does refuse. Dodger, though, comes back to the rec center, though, and says, hey, guess what, Archie? I know you are this masked vigilante that's been going around causing me all this sort of trouble. Archie tries to deny it, but Dodger goes, yeah, I know it's you. I got what I need. I'm going to see you later. And so Archie then stupidly goes back to Hiram and says, hey, I need your help. Sometimes, you know, I've tried going to the cops. The cops can't do anything unless they actually see Dodger having evidence on him. And if he doesn't have it on him, I can't arrest him. That's what FP says. And Hiram and Archie talk, and Archie says to Hiram, you know, there are some things that need to be taken care of a different way than going to the cops. That just sometimes that happens in life. And Hiram's like, I hope you don't think I'm trying to form a violent act. And he passes. So, but we see we end the episode, though, with Dodger being found outside the rec center, all beaten up in a rug. Somebody laid a beat down on him. So whether it's Hiram or somebody else, we'll see what happens now with Archie. I mean, it doesn't seem like he'd be, even if it was Hiram, that Archie would owe anything to him. Tough to say. Ryan, play this out with me. If you go to somebody that you know is kind of a mob type, you know, mob affiliations, and you say, hey, I need help to get rid of this person.
I'm thinking Michael Klaus, actually. He's the guy, yeah, right here.
Absolutely, right. You go to Michael Klaus and say, Michael, I need help getting rid of somebody. And we all know if you're talking to this particular person, Michael Klaus,
right,
that it's going to mean some violence is going to be done to whichever person you're looking to get rid of.
Oh, without a doubt.
And Michael says, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do a violent act, and leaves. The next day, you find that person that you wanted to get rid of all beaten up. If Michael comes back to you later and says, hey, looks like your problem's taken care of, you owe me, do you feel you owe him?
Because, and he said no first.
Yes.
I think you said no, so I wasn't expecting it from you.
Yeah.
And maybe I already asked someone else. And if he says he ended up doing it, actually, you know, that's a take back, and there's no take backs.
There's no take backs,
Michael.
Yep. Don't you try to do it.
Don't do it. Look at that. He's taking some out. Don't take backs.
Come on. So let's see what happens with Archie. Again, out of my four main characters, this is my least favorite storyline, and I feel like I'm going through this this episode now, kind of ranking them from worst to first in terms of my storylines developing so far this season. So I'm putting Archie at the bottom. My next storyline, though, is, you know, I'm going to put Veronica. It's close between two and three, but I'm going to put Veronica there just because I don't know about her, Hiram and Hermione. They basically, now they're both out of prison. Veronica and Hermione are finally free of Hiram. After everything that happened last season, even though both of them are out of prison, they are now free and clear of Hiram. So Veronica is all about, like, hey, I want to keep you and my half-sister Hermosa just out of our lives. You're not going to live here. You're going to do your own thing. But we find that Hiram, who seems like he's flip-flopping all the time, because last episode he said, hey, I want to run for mayor. That was his big thing. He's running for mayor. Now we find out this episode that no. What he really wants to do is he wants to get back into his first passion, which is rum. He's got a rum business down in Miami that his daughter, Veronica's half sister, oversees. And now he wants to do a rum outpost here in Riverdale, have Hermosa hang out for a little bit to get that all started up. I've never heard Hiram talk about rum at all, ever. For something that he's so passionate about, to have him never mention it once in the since he's been on since season two, seems kind of weird. But all right, I guess we'll extend that to you. Hiram, that you love rum and you got to get a rum outpost out here in Riverdale. So he wants to do that, but he also wants the family to get back together so he can do all this. So he does what Hiram does because he's jacked and he's ripped and he's been hitting the weights while he's been in prison. And he comes back into Hermione at night and said, all he says is, you know, takes off his shirt and they do a bit of floor play. And Ryan, I know you're a ladies' man.
Right.
And
by the way, there's a lot of commentary on this in the chat.
On the storyline?
Yes, on the storyline. Also just talking about hitting the floor, the rug, without gloves. Can't believe Hermione let Hiram back in.
Yes.
Hiram, sorry. But yeah, what were you going to ask about me and the ladies?
Well, you and the ladies, because I know, Ryan, world-renowned ladies' man. Mm. You know, he's a Casanova here at AfterBuzz.
That's right. Just,
ladies love him, men want to be him.
Shine the spotlight on me right now.
That's right. Mm. If you're with somebody, right. Is the best way to add spice into your relationship if both of you are ordering hits on each other? Is that a way they really keep the relationship going?
You know, that's a good way to spice it up for here and there. I think if you're really trying to be unexpected, you know, ordering someone else to take a hit on you, that's really unexpected. And if you can survive it, that's what's really hot.
That's true. Nothing says I love you than putting out a contract on you.
Mm-hmm. And it just shows, you know, you're willing to put the time and effort into getting that contract, signing it, and have someone else carry out the deed for you instead. And you know, you trust your loved one so much that you know they're not going to be able to kill them.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, absolutely. And you guys are going to, it's all going to work out. You're going to dodge the assassination attempt, and then you guys are going to be all hot and ready to go when you guys reunite back in the home and just get it on.
Oh yes, there's nothing better than self defense.
Yes,
and then you just get like, protect yourselves.
So, you know, we see Hiram and Hermione. They get back together and they're going to renew their vows. And Veronica's having none of it. She doesn't want to get involved. She can't believe that Hermione has actually taken Hiram back, and I can't blame her because Hiram. Not a great dude, and anytime he always does something nice where you want to think like, hey, all right, Hiram's not that bad. Basically, whatever kind of nice deed that he's done has some sort of terrible consequence after the fact that you don't realize at the time. So you can't trust Hiram at all. And I don't know if that's good or bad in terms of the show. Do you want – because anytime Hiram gets involved in something, you're going to think like, all right, you're pretending to be nice now, but I know there are strings attached that are going to come back and bite me in the butt later on. And I don't know if that's the best way to have this character. Do you want to be able to have sometimes that he could genuinely be an upstanding guy that's trying to help out, but then there are those other times where he's always scheming and manipulating. So at least it gives it a little more bounce, a little more intrigue. So you never know exactly what his agenda is. Because right now you think anytime Hiram gets involved in something, I don't want to say an evil agenda, but it is an agenda that will benefit Hiram in some way and hurt anybody else around him. So, I don't know. I feel like I would rather see Hiram written a little bit more nuanced. Let's sometimes let him actually be a little bit of the good guy. Yeah, I mean, who am I to say? I'm not in the writer's room.
You are the right to say, I think, Frank. Yeah. I think, we can only hope the best for some characters that we really care about. And we can also really care about the people in the chat right now, because we got some awesome shout-outs. Just wrote a few down.
Oh.
Just want to shout out Logan.
Shout him.
Logan Knight here each and every week. We love you, Logan. Thank you so much for your support. Also, Amy McCutcheon, thank you so much for coming in tonight. And Melody Soto, JK, it's Ivan Soto. I know, Ivan, you don't like it when we say Melody, but he's on his sister's account. You know, give the computer back to Melody.
Thank you, everybody, for joining us. And, you know, folks, you take your the time out of your Wednesday night. There's a million things you could be doing. You could be, you know, baking a cake. You could be working on like a macrame project. You could be, you know, watching like Disney Plus, The Mandalorian. I know Ryan's got a lot of thoughts about that. But you've decided, no, I want to hang out with Ryan and Frank and watch the Riverdale After Show. So thank you so much. But folks, we're also asking for just a little bit of help too. So anytime you get a chance, not just for the Riverdale After Show, but any of the shows that we do here at AfterBuzz TV, Popcorn Talk, Black Hollywood Live, Book Circle Online, if you like them, you know, subscribe to the YouTube channel, give it a thumbs up, give it a 5-star rating on iTunes, and then just do what you're doing tonight here, which is hopping in the chat and getting involved. So thanks for helping us become the ESPN or TV Talk. There you go. Yes.
Yes.
So I'm putting Veronica's storyline at number 3. Number 2, I'm going to go up to Betty. Betty's trying to figure out the mystery of her half-brother, Charles, and what's his deal is. So, like any good budding FBI agent, she has been following his routine for past several days, trying to figure out, is he a serial killer or not? What's his plan? What's his agenda here in Riverdale? And he pretty much keeps to the same routine. And even Kevin's like, well, seems like he's a boring gay dude. And that's when Brady thinks, like, hold on, maybe there's something else I can do. And she decides to pay a visit to her false half-brother, Chick, which we met back there in season 2, and trying to find out some real dirt about Charles. Because, of course, when Chick first showed up, he said that he took over Charles's identity and that Charles led Betty to believe that Charles was indeed dead. But we find out, of course, that Charles is alive. So she tries to figure out what was really true about anything that you said about knowing Charles back when I first met you a couple years back. And it, according to Chick, what happened is that he and Charles were running around. Then they got hopped up on Jingle Jangle one night. There was a guy that went back, came back to the house. Charles snapped, grabbed scissors, and then stabbed this guy, killed him, and then they got rid of the body. So, sounds like a cool way to spend the night, huh?
Yikes.
That's going to hurt. So, Betty, being the smart person that she is knows that she's not going to take anything that Chick says at face value. She's going to, I mean, given everything that Chick's done to her in the past, as she says, she takes everything with a little bit of grain of salt. So she does what any loving sister does. She gives her half-brother a polygraph test. Ryan?
Yeah?
Have you had a polygraph test?
I actually never have. This is the lie detector thing, right?
That is. Yeah, that it is.
Never have. I've always wanted to do it. Maybe we can get one here at AfterBuzz.
All right. Folks, you don't have to wait anymore. Michael, come on in. Bring
Michael,
it right
come
in.
Come on in. Is he here? Oh, I think he's actually sitting. Oh, wait, he is here.
Yeah, he's got that lie detector. He's going to bring it right in. Strap you right in.
We'll try and get one in studio.
Yeah, that's right. You know, I've never done a lie detector test.
Never.
I would like to do it because, I mean, my only knowledge base of it is just by seeing it in movies and TV shows. And, you know, when people talk about trying, can you beat the polygraph test? Can you do it? I would be intrigued to take one just to see if, because you want to know if you could beat it.
Right.
That's the whole thing. It's like, yeah, I could beat this machine. I know I could be chill enough that I could make anybody believe whatever lie I'm saying is really the truth. So I'd be down for that. But, Ryan.
Yeah.
I feel like, would you give a polygraph test as a, you know, to a sibling just to make sure they're on the up and up?
Oh, I would have loved to in the past. Are you kidding me? In the past, that would have come in real good handy, I think. Yeah. Just, you know, hey, did you take my sweatshirt? Okay, I can't find it. Maybe, okay, you didn't? Got it. Or, I didn't break that plate. Did you break that plate? No, I didn't break that plate. Stuff like that, just everyday house needs growing up. Yeah, that would have been very helpful to see just who was lying or who wasn't telling the whole truth. And I do hope some people in the chat are telling us the truth on their feelings on this episode. Another another two more shout-outs to Billie Jean Girl in the chat here each and every week. We love seeing you here, Billie Jean Girl, as well as Malcolm Adderley. Thank you so much for your support.
Oh, yes. Thank you, folks. Absolutely. It's we see Betty's questions, and they basically, Charles is very truthful until at the end when Betty asks, are you hiding anything from us? And, of course, the needle starts to twitch a little bit, and Charles comes out and says, hey, the reason I'm going to this gym is that I'm a recovering addict, and the meetings are at the gym that I go to. So that's my big secret. And then he takes off the arm strap for the polygraph and calls it quits himself. As soon as he did that, I mean, we already know from past episodes that he's been listening in on Betty's conversations with people. So we already know there's something up with Charles. But anytime somebody decides to end the polygraph after a question, instead of the person that's asking the question saying, okay, I think we're done, if they just give their question, I hope that makes you happy, and then takes off the arm strap or a polygraph test and leaves, you know they're leaving because it's getting closer and closer to them actually exposing some secret that they don't want you to know. So as soon as Charles leaves, I already know he's listening to conversations, but you already know that there's something more to Charles than what he's saying. And we do find out what it is by the end of the episode. Because Chick decides to, after Betty is visited in prison, decides to report that there's been a murder over in the Black Hood's house by Alice Cooper, and which we saw back in season two when Chick first showed up. It was the shady guy that when Betty came home, she saw Alice wiping up all the blood on the floor, and then they hid this kid's body somewhere in the woods of Riverdale. And so FP and Charles decide, hey, we're going to go get this body before anybody else tries to find it and get rid of any evidence that could possibly get back to Alice. So they dispose of it, but we find out that really what this all is an elaborate setup by not just Charles, but Chick and Charles working together to do something. We'll find out what that is. But basically, it was just a way, Chick did this as a way to get Charles in a place where he could become more trustworthy to Betty, Alice, and FP. So we get to see Chick and Charles at the end having a little conversation where they the other side of the prison glass walls, and with a little I love you, and the typical prison thing when you're talking to somebody on the other side of the glass, you always got to put your hand up. Ryan, I know you go to prison a lot to visit people.
I'm putting the hand up right now, Frank.
All right, we're doing. There we go. We're doing
this.
There we
go. Magical moment.
All right, we're doing it. Yes, we did it. I would like to think that I would not do the hand on the glass if I were talking to somebody.
You know, I go to prison a lot.
Yeah, I know you go to prison a lot. Okay. You're always going over there visiting friends and, you know, whatever. Just, you know, people from your past.
Roommates.
You know, I got a roommate that's in prison now. I got to go visit and see what's up. Yes. Is it cliche that the hand on the glass, or do you think if you were visiting somebody in prison, boom, your hand's going up on the glass?
You know, it depends on the visit. I think if it's a good visit, you always end with, hey, hang in there. One hand, almost a high five. It's a spiritual, you know, this is the only thing separating us. This is this class. But if it's someone close to you, if it's someone you really care about,
yes,
you got to go the whole way. You got to go like this. You just got to hug the glass.
There you go. You got to hug it?
Hug it. Put the Wawa emblem there and just go, I am here for you. Like Iron Man's heart is there in him.
That's true. You know, you never see anybody just like blow hot breath onto the glass and then draw like a heart on that or anything. Oh, nobody ever does that.
That's a great idea. Write a little message.
Yeah. You know what? All right. I guess I'm going to have to go visit somebody in prison and give that a shot and see how it goes. Fingers crossed. It turns out all right.
Yeah.
Now we're getting to my number one storyline here of the week. I know you've been waiting. Like, oh, man, what's it going to be? What's it going to be? Well, it's really only one other choice here. There's actually two other choices because we've got, I forgot a storyline because it was too bonkers. We've got Cheryl. I'm going to put Cheryl at number two. We see Cheryl and Tony. It's this whole thing with Julian and this doll, this creepy doll that is the supposedly houses the spirit of her unborn triplet brother is now, of course, peering all over the place in Thistle House again. And we see that Cheryl has a nightmare and wakes up screaming. And Tony is laying right next to her in bed, doesn't hear anything. I actually, Ryan, please tell me if you have.
Okay.
I have never been with anybody that has woken up in the middle of the night screaming from a nightmare.
From a nightmare?
Yes. Like they just like had a nightmare, a terrible dream, and they wake up screaming. I've never been in that situation. But I would like to think that if I was with somebody that woke up in the bed next to me, just woke up screaming from a terrible nightmare, that I would actually absolutely wake up. Don't you think?
Oh, no, yeah, absolutely. It's funny. I had a nightmare. I have a nightmare like every 2 months.
Wow.
Like once every 2 months.
The same nightmare or
not
different?
Not the same nightmare. It's okay. Something different, and it's usually like very quick, and I'm like, whoa, what just happened? It's somewhat refreshing because it just means you're still dreaming. But at the same time, if I was with someone who had a nightmare, yeah, I don't know how I would react because it depends how deep in sleep I am. If I'm in deep sleep, I might react pretty poorly and be like, you know, get away from me. But if I'm like sort of in REM, like still kind of, you know, pre-deep sleep, then it might just be a little more like, oh, okay, is everything all right? All right, yeah. Shut your eyes. Go back to bed. And then I'd go to sleep. But, I don't know how I would react. It hasn't happened to me yet.
Yeah, I would just like to think that no matter how deep of a sleeper that you would be, if you had somebody laying right next to you screaming at the top of their lungs, you would wake up.
I surely hope so. If I wouldn't wake up from that, I might not wake up from an alarm.
No, that's true. So Cheryl has this nightmare. Tony doesn't wake up, which I'm like, come on, what's going on there? But we also have Cheryl getting a visit from some of her extended family who decided to show up. And the reason they're showing up is that they've decided, the rest of the family, outside of Cheryl and everybody at Thistle House, that it's time to get rid of the dead weight business of the Blossom family, and that is the maple syrup business. It's bleeding out money. It's not doing well. It's time to cut their losses, sell that off, and get out. And what they basically need is, because Clifford's dead and Penelope's on the run, is they need Cheryl to get a sign off and say, okay. And Cheryl's at least going to consider it until they mention, hey, before we leave, we just want to go down to the chapel and just light a little Thanksgiving candle, you know, and honor our ancestors. And we all know that Jason is just, you know, chilling. The dead body of Jason is just chilling in the wheelchair down in the chapel. So as soon as Cheryl hears that, she's like, absolutely not. Get out of here. You're never going to go in this chapel. I'm not going to sign this. I'm not going to do anything. So basically what happens by the end of the episode, we see her uncle sneak back in, break into the chapel, and come across the body of Jason just hanging out with the doll Julian just right there hanging on his lap, and says, hey, I'm going to take you. I'm going to get you committed right now. And then we don't even need your signature because we can just take care of everything ourselves. And then Tony knocks him out. So they've done something with the body. I don't think he's dead. It's tough to say. He's been knocked out in the back of the head. He collapses. Doesn't look like he's dead because there's no pool of blood there, at least that I could see. So basically, he's just been unconscious, and Cheryl and Tony have hidden him somewhere. So that way, when her aunt comes looking for her husband, like Cheryl says, I don't know where he is. If you want to find him, you'd need to get a search warrant.
We got people in the chat, external shockwaves, and not suspicious at all, Cheryl. Yeah, that doesn't sound suspicious at all. A lot of people are just saying, man, Cheryl was not sly at all in this scenario.
Well, anytime you tell somebody to, like, get a search warrant, you're basically saying,
search warrant.
Yeah, there's something. I did something. I'm not going to tell you what I did. But if you really want it, you're going to have to work hard to try to get into this house and look around for it. My question, though, is, Ryan, real quick, if you have a doll that you think is housing the soul of your unborn triplet brother.
And Annabelle.
Yes, and Annabelle. Sure, why not? Instead of just doing something practical, like, hey, let's just burn it.
Right.
That'd be the first thing. Let's throw it into a thrasher or something. Just something to just, you know, smash
just
the thing
apart.
Just
get rid of it.
Absolutely. Cheryl, in this episode, when they just say, like, hey, we got to get rid of this body. First, she tries to do a ring of salt. That doesn't work. Who knows what's going on with
that?
Don't
do that.
But the other thing that she does is that she just puts it into a tub of water and lays a brick on top of it as if she's drowning it.
Right. I mean,
what is that?
Look, it's just, how are you going to destroy this doll, right? And I think you said fire first off. That's
yes.
The go-to, because obviously dolls are flammable. So you want to light that thing up. If you really want to destroy it, you got to light that thing up.
Absolutely.
But I like the idea of drowning. It's just I don't think a doll has lungs like us, so it might not be effective. If you want to trap it down there via, you know, Jason from Friday the 13th, we all know what happens. He comes back up.
Yes.
You can't keep everything down there. It will submerge sooner or later. So what you got to do is either, first off, what you got to do is either get a match. Don't do this at home, by the way, but get a match, light it on fire, and then you put all the ashes in the water, disperse it that way. That's what you need to do.
There you go. That's been Ryan Nilsson's ways to get rid of a demonic doll.
Ding.
So we'll see what happens with Cheryl and the storyline. And you know what? I had forgotten this storyline, so my apologies. I'd actually knocked this down a few bits. I'd probably put that at number 4. So I do Archie, then Cheryl, then Veronica, then Betty, then our number one story, and that is Jughead Jones. That's right, Forsythe III. He is basically he's got a mystery, and he wants to solve it, and it all comes down to these Baxter Boy books. And Jughead's has some writer's block, and he's trying to figure out how he can get around it. And the one thing he wants to do, if he's going to be trying to write a Baxter Boy story, is he wants to try to break down the Baxter Boys novels scientifically, find out all the ingredients that are in them, which is smart thinking to find out. If you're trying to emulate a certain genre, a certain style, why not read the past books in that series to kind of break down what they do, how they make it work, and then hopefully that will kind of give you some ideas of how you can execute your story within that sort of those parameters. But while he's doing that, he realizes that the first 5 books, which DuPont claims to have written the first 5 before he passed it on to ghostwriters, he realizes there's a difference between books 1 and 2. The way that the dialogue is written, the phrasing, very distinctly different from books 1 and 2, making him realize that, hey, I don't think DuPont wrote the first novel. He wrote 2 through 5, but he didn't write the first one. And he tells Betty that, hey, this sounds crazy, but I think it was my grandfather. I think he wrote the first one, especially because he gave me an original copy of the first Baxter Boys book, and inside it left me an inscription that says, never let them take anything away from you. So eventually, through the course of the episode, he finds an old literary magazine from Riverdale High that has a shout-out to a tertiary character, the Nancy Drew, to the Baxter Boys, Hardy Boys, Bitsy Bane, in that story written by Frosty Pajamas, which is a great pseudonym. Brian, I'm sorry, that's taken. You can no longer...
I know. I got to give her a new Twitter handle.
Yeah, Frosty Pajamas. So he figures, hey, this is written even before the first Baxter Boys book was published. This story with Bitsy Bane in it came out, so it's got to be my grandfather. So what he does is he talks to DuPont, goes to him right away and says, hey, I wonder what the deal is. I don't think you wrote all 5 books. I think my grandfather wrote the first book. And while DuPont has been really nice in the episode prior about, hey, my gosh, I knew your grandfather. Oh, he was great. We really get to see when he's challenged about this, all facades drop with DuPont. And he is basically, hey, your father's a vagabond. All you folks, anytime you get an inch, you want to take a mile. You know, I should take you right to the headmaster and get you expelled for dare accusing me of something like this. So basically, Jughead knows that's not going to work. So what he does is he goes to his teacher, Mr. Chipping, shows him the evidence and says, "This, how could you? You're a writer as well. You can understand this, right?" And Chipping says, "Yeah, I agree. I can't deny this. Your grandfather wrote this story. I'll help you come clean and reveal this and make sure that your father gets credit for this." So Jughead's feeling good, like, "Hey, all right, I've got my teacher on my side. Everything's going to turn out right in the end." And as soon as you know, especially this early in the season, when you find out, if you're able to kind of get somebody on your side about a secret, especially somebody that's not a main character, you know their time on the show is coming to an end rapidly. And that's the case with Mr. Chipping, because he shows up the next morning. Ryan, I know you love this part of the episode.
Mm-hmm.
He's right there in the room while all the other students are sitting there in their little circle. And he basically just kind of walks in, kind of turns his back to Jughead and goes, "I wish I could have helped you, Jughead." And then just goes to a dead sprint and jumps out the window down to the ground. "See you later, Mr. Chipping."
Wow.
And who takes over the class but DuPont? DuPont takes it over now. And Jughead's like, what is going on now?
They kind of flip the ending of Dead Poets Society on their heads in that way. You know, you wish he just, you know, would nod, take his belongings and walk out. But instead, it's a high-rise, high-jump out the window.
That's nice jump though. It was just that. And what was really weird is that he does the jump and then Jughead looks out the window, looks back to his fellow students that are in the classroom, says, "Somebody call an ambulance. Somebody call an ambulance." And the four other students in the classroom are just sitting there.
Wow.
Like, what is going on?
What an episode.
Yeah, what an episode. So we'll see what happens now with DuPont heading up this this classroom of Jughead's and what's in store for him. But that kind of covers the episode, but we got a real quick hot news story, as I told you at the beginning. TV news. You know, we've got the People's Choice Awards that happened this past weekend on E! Entertainment Television there, and our own KJ Apa went there, and he shared a little story there where he, of course, very popular on social media, but he says that he has a lot of fans will slide into his DMs, and sometimes, you know, he'll read them over, and he was coyly, when asked if he was to ever respond to any of those DMs, he was very coy about it. So folks, if you want to slide into KJ Apa's DMs, I mean, now is the time to do it. I know Ryan will be sliding into them later.
Yes, I will. I'll yes. send 5 messages to watch this after show.
Perfect. There you go. Come on, KJ. Well, I mean, you're in town right now for the, you know, the People's Choice Awards. You know, slide by here. You know, do a little Riverdale after show with me. We'll just break it all down. Have a good time. Ryan, real quick, I know as we're wrapping up here, have you ever slid into a celebrity's DMs?
Okay, well, half joking earlier to watch the after show, but I actually have to book guests on shows before, and it has worked twice.
Out of how many times?
Ooh, I mean, it's over 40.
But it's still,
over 40.
All right. Yeah, I mean, two out of 40, not bad. I mean, you gotta throw out a lot to get a couple.
There was a day I think I sent at least 35, and I only heard back from one person.
Wow.
Yeah.
Man.
It's rare.
Yeah, it's I've never slid into a celebrity's DMs.
Well, start sliding, Frank.
I got to start sliding. I might slide into your DMs later, Ryan.
We're going to slide out of here.
What? Oh, I'm getting the Heisman from Ryan. That's cool. Whatever, dude. Whatever. Folks, that's going to do it for this episode of the Riverdale After Show. Thanks for joining Ryan and myself. As always, we really appreciate you taking time out of your Wednesday night to join us to break down this ridiculous series that is Riverdale. But as always, like us on Facebook, give us 5 stars on iTunes, subscribe to the YouTube channel, give it a thumbs up while you're there. And again, thank you everybody for hopping in the chat. But if you want to follow either Ryan or myself, even after the show's over, Ryan, where can they find you?
You guys can find me at RYNILSEN. That's at Ryan Nilsen. And on Instagram at RYNILSEN_.
And don't forget to check out Star Wars News on Thursdays and the Mandalorian After Show. It's going to be on Fridays now,
Thank
correct?
You. Fridays at noon, Mandalorian After Show and Star Wars News tomorrow, 4 p.m. Pacific.
Oh, my gosh. Look at that. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Happy Go Jackie. Folks, that's going to do it for this episode. We'll be back here next Wednesday night with an all-new episode right here on AfterBuzz TV.
Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.